Hi everyone, welcome to HFS Unfiltered. Today I have a very, very, very special guest, Jay Desai, who's the head of IT infra and operations at JTI. He's an ex-boss, so thank you, boss, for making the time. But also, what I find very interesting is Jay is one of the rare enterprise leader who's done what very few others have. He's led global business services. He's leading IT infra and cloud. And I think in his spare time, he even does some cybersecurity if he can. So, you know, and I can say it with some confidence because Jay was, as I mentioned, Jay was my boss in past life. And he always brings a brutally honest view and never holds back. So thank you. Thank you for joining us, Jay.
Glad to be here, Saurav, and thank you for having me on.
Most of the enterprise leaders, right? They pick a lane. They'll go with IT or they'll go with business. You've been in both those worlds, right? You've been in the GBS world for the longest time. You're leading IT operations, IT infra right now. How did your journey evolve to span these sort of traditionally siloed domains? And Was it somewhat intentional? Was it accidental? Was it a bit of both?
So a little bit of both, right? So look, I built the GBS here at JTI. You know, we built it during COVID. We went through that. You know, we navigated through the complexities of the war. I was one of the few who actually had a shared service center in Russia, in addition to Poland and Philippines. So there was a fairly complicated piece of work. But as you probably know, you know, GBS leader's shelf life is usually 3 to 4 years. I was done with about 5, and I started talking to my boss about what's next, right? And now this is where the luck part plays a factor. So like a few GBS leaders, my reporting line is to the head of IT and GBS. It was to the CFO. But for the last 3 odd years, I reported into effectively the CIO. And I started bouncing a few ideas with him that what could next look like. And I sort of zoned in on IT infrastructure for a couple of reasons, right? If you step back, IT infrastructure essentially is IT shared services, right? You work across every part of IT. Like GBS, you touch every employee in the company. And I said, this could be a neat area to get into. Two, with our shared experiences at our former employer, we know that IT infrastructure, there are usually a few opportunities. So I gave a hypothesis to my boss and I said, look, here's what I would do. So I essentially sold it, right, to him. And I've been leading it for the last year or so. Cybersecurity was literally dropped into my lap because our CISO retired. And then my boss asked me to take off the cloak of interim CISO.
So Jay, how has your perspective changed? You know, has your perspective changed having been in all these 2.5 roles, let's say?
I would definitely say yes, right? I've definitely come away with a richer understanding of the why. Right? If I pick on security, why is security becoming more and more important today than it ever was yesterday? Right? But particularly at the confluence of GBS and IT, right? I think part of at least what I've realized is that ultimately, when we step back, there are a lot of commonalities, right? We are ultimately here to provide a set of capabilities to the rest of the organization, right? And the focus should be around experience. So I look at that common thread, but then I look at where the divergences are, right? Where the rub typically tends to happen. And it usually comes back to usually one thing, right? Money, right? Who pays for what? So I would say more commonalities, right? About the capabilities that we provide, maybe a few divergences in terms of how we provide them, and usually a little bit of a rub around, you know, who does what and, you know, who pays for what.
Yeah. So you know this, Jay, we at HFS, we've talked about this thing called the HFS One Office, where essentially we are saying, look, let's stop thinking about front office, back office, business versus IT. At the end of the day, we are a connected enterprise, and ultimately all that matters is one office that caters to the customer. And whoever I've talked to in my 8 years that I've been with HFS, I have not found a single leader who's said, no, this does not make sense. But at the same time, I've not also found a single organization who said, yes, we've achieved the one office. So why is this still... And you're one of the few, I feel, who's seen both sides of the world now. So I can ask you that question. Why is it so hard?
I'll give you my view, maybe an imperfect or incomplete view. But I'd say that the number one gap, right, tends to be around, you know, aligning the vision with incentives, right? So again, let's take a little step back, right? So when I was in GBS, I used to wonder, like, you know, why is it taking so long to do certain things? Why is it costing me so much, right? And now I'm in IT, you know, I see the other end of the spectrum. So I call it the moral hazard dilemma, which is not what you think it is, right? Moral hazard is essentially when there is a separation between the beneficiary, you know, of that so-called initiative and the person who's paying for it. As long as you've got two divergences there, right, you will typically have competing priorities, right? If I was in GBS and I don't have to pay for, say, Copilot, I'm like, okay, I need Copilot for all my people because I'm not paying for it. And I keep the benefits, right? And I will harvest them when the time comes. So I would say that moral hazard, and I would take it to the next step, shared vision, shared and aligned incentives, right? So I would say that the secret is we need to work across diverse functions, right? With some common goals. A common goal could be, we want to improve the employee experience. And then, you know, that's a shared goal, right? And that works across functions. That could be across GBS, IT, finance, HR, take your pick, right? And then you align your KPIs, your OKRs across the board. Today, they are not. Like, if you look at finance is concerned about cost compliance. You look at HR, it's about experience. You look at IT, it's usually about delivering capability. It's not aligned. When you align these, you will have momentum. I would say that's what's holding back adoption of one office.
That's so well said, because I've done so many workshops around this, and it all boils down to alignment and incentives. Because we are incented as human beings to do what gives us our paycheck, right? And these incentives are not often aligned, you know, and in fact, they're becoming more and more misaligned as we go forward. So, but who's responsible for this, right? This shouldn't be such a hard problem to align, you know, these are all smart people. You know, you talk to CFO, you talk to your CIO, you talk to your procurement function, sales, marketing. These are all smart folks. So why can't we get them aligned on the same thing? Who's responsible for this?
So you're asking who's the person who's going to put the bell around the cat, yeah? I think, look, on one hand, you can step back and say, look, somebody's going to sort it out. But the reality is you've got to sort it out yourself, right? So what I found interesting and what I used to do is bring people in the room, okay? And then you ask them to prioritize, right, amongst themselves. And I don't mean, you know, people at my level. I'm talking about the C-suite, right? Because if you talk to a sales leader or P&L leader, they want ultimately things that help them. So it's usually about speed. How quickly can you get me what I want? Whereas I said, CFO wants cost, right? Bring them in a room together and have them prioritize. Say, look, guys, you know, I'm ready to do what you would like me to do. But can you, you know, sitting in the C-suite, work it out amongst yourselves? What is your priority number 1, 2, and 3? And we proceed accordingly. And I think this has to be an ongoing process, you know, of prioritizing, because the reality is the world that we live in changes quite quickly. So you also need to be adaptable enough to change these priorities as the world around us changes. But I would say you can't wait for somebody to solve it. You know, you got to do it yourself.
So it's essentially getting people in a room. The other topic that I wanted to touch upon, and we've spent, I think, 10 minutes and we've not talked about AI, so we have to talk about it, is Gen AI and Agentic AI. It's there in every boardroom conversation today. But I call it like the death by a thousand POCs right now. Yes, every organization has tons of these pilots and POCs in every nook and corner. Very few have been able to really scale these things up into production. And so again, you know, I think the why is very clear. You know, it's definitely a strong value proposition. The technology is also getting better. You know, it's almost there and it's getting better every day that we speak. So what's holding us back there?
So in a sense, while the technologies evolve, the challenges have not. So if you remember, when we tried to roll out Blue Prism, you remember what the challenges were, right? Control, compliance, limitations on the technology, right? Change management, right? So they have not changed that much. It's the same set of challenges. But if I were to do a double click, right? Agentic AI is pretty darn good. It's adaptive. However, it's not always consistent and it's not always 100% accurate. So in processes that need that level of accuracy, there are limitations. So maybe fit for use is maybe you don't start by putting it into mission critical processes. You put it into processes where you can afford to basically be 90% accurate and you need to, you as a company, need to be okay with it, right? Cost is a big component, back to the moral hazard conversation, because there are a lot of hidden costs. It's not just about tokens. It's also about computing power. And, you know, ultimately, you need to synchronize not just the cost of building something, but you also need to synchronize the cost of running that, right? And we are seeing it as we have started scaling it, the cost continues to go up. So you need to be clear enough in tracking it, and then essentially extending what we call as FinOps on the cloud side to the AI piece as well, to basically put your costs in a more controlled and predictable manner. There are security concerns, right, around separation of duties, right, for as an example, right? There is trust issues. But I think the large providers, particularly Microsoft, for example, ServiceNow, SAP, they are making their investments to basically address these, right? So, the most important one is essentially the cultural and organizational resistance to adoption. Because let's be real, with all the hype, with these bold, audacious statements that people are making about the impact, your average person is worried. And you can say this all you want, that yes, we will move you to more productive things, right? More things that you will enjoy. It's nebulous. It's not something that's tangible. So until and unless people can see it, but here's what this is, here's what it means for me, here's how it's improved my life for the better, we will continue seeing this resistance.
Yeah. It's the same story that repeats every time with every new technology intervention, Jay, right? It's the debts that we've collected as enterprises, right? We keep talking about the technical debt, and yes, technical debt is important, but there are so many other debts, right? You talked about the cultural debt that we have. We have a people or a skills debt, right? The mindset debt. There's a process debt. You know, I remember the Blue Prism thing that you were talking about. There was a process issue ultimately because the security and the audit didn't have the process to look at a new technology. So I think my point on this is, you know, there's a limit to how much you can buy on your credit card. At some point of time, you have to pay your debts. And I think exactly. Till we figure that out as enterprises, you know, we are going to get a lot of a lot of cuts, but not really a good surgery. So, tell me one thing, Jay, as you've seen these two sides of the world, right? The business GBS side and the IT side. And I've seen your hair turn white over the last 5 years, completely white now. Is what's been the harshest what's been the harshest lesson for you? As you've seen this, what can others learn from your experiences?
Look, we went through, as we built the GBS, we went through quite a journey, right? So a huge reason why the hair turned white was because we started the GBS journey in August 2019. And if you now know the chronology, I think I had about 20 people and then COVID hit. Okay, so everything was virtual. So the hair started turning white at that point in time. But I would say that jokes apart, I think the lesson learned is, you know, experience and perception of experience trumps reality. So you need to overinvest in one, improving and continuing to improve the employee experience, and overinvest in managing your stakeholders. Okay, it was hard to do during COVID, you know, but we pivoted very, very quickly after that. But I would say that those are the things that matter the most, because the reality is, when you build out a GBS, the biggest financial benefit is when you build it, right? You get wage arbitrage, you get, you know, the initial bump. The tough part is going to be the ongoing pieces. And that is basically where the C-suite attention starts pivoting into other things, right? Because initially the C-suite is committed. We're going to do this and we're going to do it by a certain date, get the benefits, no problem. The fun starts after that, right? And at that point in time, experience, stakeholder management, trump everything else. You know, it trumps standardization, it trumps automation, it trumps, you know, your efficiencies, etc. Focus on these two pieces. And it's as true, by the way, it's as true in both areas. It's as true on the GPS side as it is true on the technology side.
Yeah. So as you look at hiring new leaders, as more and more people are obviously ambitious and want to take up, you know, new leadership roles, what's your advice to them? What kind of a mindset, what kind of a skill set do we need to have in this AI era?
Good question, actually. I would say, maybe if I can think in terms of three, right? I would say that first and foremost, have an adaptive/agile mindset. You know, agility is not about speed. Agility is about having the mindset to adapt as the world around you adapts, right? Which also means don't be afraid to fall on your backside a few times. Because the greatest teacher that you can have is basically learning through those mistakes that you make when you fall on your, you know, that caused you to fall on your backside. Second, I would say is, you know, you need to have the ability to earn trust, right? And, you know, to frame this up, mandate. A lot of my peers talk about mandates, right? Future leaders, you know, mandates are earned, not given. So you need to have the mindset to go out, you know, talk to people, understand their pain points, right? Understand why are they, you know, thinking in a certain manner? Why are they not for whatever it is that you're trying to do? And then pivot accordingly. So think, you know, think in increments, think, you know, in iterations, you know, because usually if people try to stop you from doing something, usually there's a good reason behind it. And I would say last but not least, you know, be yourself, right? Be real. Because people can smell a bullshitter a mile away. So be real with yourself, you know, and be real for your people. The people that you build up around you, they expect things from you. They expect you to give them direction. They need clarity of purpose. But most importantly, they want a leader who they can relate to a person who they know will have their backs, right? So these are the softer skills, you know, that are going to be more and more important than the harder technical skills.
Yeah, look, Jared, fantastic conversation. And I can say for sure, you're one of the most real people that I've worked with, worked for, and I've had the pleasure of knowing. So, and I love the moral hazard concept. I'm going to absolutely pilfer that and write something on it, Jay. But thanks a lot for spending the time with us. I really found this conversation to be very enriching, and I hope some of the people who are listening to us found it useful as well. So thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for having me, Saurabh. Always a pleasure to catch up with you, man.